Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
My name is John Torrens, and I'm a professor of entrepreneurship at Syracuse University. I'm our deputy department chair, and I'm the program manager for our master's in entrepreneurship. I'm the academic director for our semester in New York City. So we send our juniors down to New York City for a semester to do internships and take classes. And in addition to my academic career, I also own a company called Sprout Therapy Group, and we work with young children with disabilities. We have an outpatient clinic, we have an integrated preschool, and we have a pretty big home health program. And in addition to that, I'm an investor in startups. I've invested in telemedicine companies, cannabis companies, other health tech things. So I teach entrepreneurship, I am an entrepreneur, and I've funded entrepreneurs. So I work at this from all angles.
Absolutely. Do you mind if we jump into some questions that were emailed to me earlier?
No, happy to answer questions.
Yeah. So some of the kids, like, they did some research, and obviously you talk quite a bit having ADHD, being diagnosed mm-hmm. with that, and you call that your superpower in entrepreneurship because you've helped create some very, very big businesses. Can you kind of elaborate a little bit on how ADHD became your superpower in the world?
Yeah. Well, so it's interesting, right? I mean, ADHD can be very disabling for a lot of people, and I don't mean to minimize it. And there's two types of ADHD. One is inattentive, and the other is hyperactive and impulsive. Inattentive doesn't correlate really well with entrepreneurial success, but hyperactive and impulsive really does. So as an adult, I got diagnosed, and I realized that I was good at certain things, like really good at certain things that just kind of tapped into the way I was wired. Like, you know, I could move from one thing to the next pretty quickly. I don't have to overthink things where some other people may have to analyze it until they're just, you know, numb and can't ever make a decision. I can move on from failures quickly. So just understanding that in the context of entrepreneurship, ADHD has a really important place, and it's very helpful at the early stages of entrepreneurship. When you get later into the stages of a company or a company's life cycle, it starts to get a little more complicated because when you have to have coherent utilization of resources and policies and procedures and planning, people with ADHD don't do as well. So it's early stage entrepreneurship that ADHD is really, really functional for. But as you get later on in company life cycle, it's a little bit harder. So, you know, it's not always positive, but, you know, so think of it as two sides of the same coin. Certain things it's super functional, certain things it can be dysfunctional, but I've tried to use it to my advantage for sure.
One of the kids, and we thank you for elaborating a bit on that. And I suffer from ADD and ADHD growing up. So I find that interesting. I really enjoyed your TEDx talk. Guys, if you haven't checked that out, definitely look that up on YouTube. One of the kids wanted to know about the process of crowdfunding. When somebody has a good idea, how does it go from idea to actual production?
Yeah, well, so that's an entire course we teach, right? Over the course of a semester. We actually teach a course called Launchpad where we get students from idea to actually starting up. So crowdfunding, I think what you're referring to is really how do you fund your endeavor? How do you fund your startup? Right? Crowdfunding, in my opinion, is probably the last resort, you know, only because if you fund from the crowd, now you're in business with the crowd. And you might not want to be partners with the crowd, right? They could be crazy people or just pains in your butt or whatever, right? So the single best form of capital for your company comes from cash flow from sales and operations. However, we understand that sometimes is harder for a variety of reasons for different companies. So almost all companies start with some form of founder savings. Usually $2,000 to $3,000. It's not that much. The company you now know as Nike started with about $2,000 of founder savings, and they started making shoes themselves and selling them out of the back of station wagons at track meets, as an example. So you don't often need as much money as you think, but you start with founder savings, you start with some debt, you start with friends and family, And then you move on the continuum of access to capital as your company grows, becomes more sophisticated and has different needs.
That's just such an intriguing process, because you see some entrepreneurs, innovators and entrepreneurs who are getting younger and younger in a traditional sense. We've been used to like them being older, and it's really neat seeing young kids on here. We have a question from Spain. This is Ignacio, you should be able to unmute to ask Dr. Torrance your question.
Okay, thanks. Hi, Ian. Nice to meet you. I would like to ask you any book about finances or entrepreneurship you would recommend us. Thank you very much.
Any book? So probably my favorite book for aspiring entrepreneurs is called The New Business Road Test by John Mullins, M-U-L-L-I-N-S. I actually use it in one of my classes that I teach. And it uses case studies to kind of set up different concepts. And there's a whole section in the back of the book that talks about using your customers' cash to fund your startup. Or the idea is that as founders, or even as an entrepreneur, especially as a professor, I see other entrepreneurs chasing capital, and that takes their focus off of running and growing their business. Because when you're looking for money, that becomes your job, and the actual operation of your company becomes secondary, and then things become problematic, and then you can't raise money for the company you're trying to raise money for because you haven't been operating it properly. So it's a catch-22, and I always recommend that you exhaust every other source before you start raising capital. And the other thing nobody really tells you, but the minute you raise capital from an external source, you've basically agreed to sell your company at some point in the future, because you have to keep providing liquidity for your current investors, which means you have to either raise another round of capital and another round of capital, or be sold, or have a public offering or something. So equity investment is not something to trifle with, and it's certainly not something to go into, you know, without really doing your homework and talking to other people who have done it.
And you know, there's a lot of challenges that you brought up here that I'm sure a lot of us, we don't think about, you know, especially those of us who are not entrepreneurs. Can one of the kids want to know, can you describe some of the important habits that you see as a member of YPO? What are some of the important habits and traits of successful entrepreneurs that you've seen?
Yeah. Well, so the biggest thing is probably this this attitude or mindset of opportunity recognition, right? I mean, let's just take flying cars as an example, right? At this very moment on the planet, there could be several million people with this idea in their head, right? But the person who actually takes an action on it, takes a step towards making it become reality, that's the person who's going to launch it, right? There could have been hundreds of people who had the idea for Twitter or Facebook or Apple or Amazon, but only a few people acted on it, and they're now the founders, right? So it's about being aware of opportunities, like looking at something and saying, well, that's kind of silly. We should find a better way to do that. Or just thinking of something that would add something, add value to people's lives. But the next thing, probably the most important thing, is taking an action on it, right? You've probably all had the experience where you have thought of the coolest idea, right? You're high-fiving your friends and you're like, yeah, that's the best idea. We're going to make a lot of money on that. We got to start it. Let's talk about it next week. Next week comes and you don't talk about it. The next week comes, you don't talk about it. And maybe, you know, look in your phone and you find an article about somebody else who started that company. And you say, man, that was my idea. It was everybody's idea. It's just somebody actually took some action and did something with it. So opportunity recognition and the courage to act in the face of everybody telling you that you can't do it, or how stupid it is, or why you fail, because everybody's going to tell you that. So yeah, it's kind of this determination in the face of a lot of no's. Howard Schultz, the founder of Starbucks, I think he had to pitch this idea for Starbucks over 300 times before he raised any money to get it going. I mean, could you imagine being told no almost 300 times and still going? I mean, that's kind of what you have to do.
It kind of makes you wonder how many ideas where somebody gave up, and if they had just gone one more pitch meeting.
Exactly. And I always say, had it not been for Howard Schultz himself as like this determined, dogged entrepreneur, Starbucks probably never would have happened, right? I mean, most of us would have been like, all right, this is a dumb idea, and given up, right? Yeah.
coffee shop. Way to think outside the box. But who would have known? So can you tell the kids, one of them wants to know, in your job, what is your favorite part in the work that you do?
So my favorite part is developing people and developing teams so they can basically do everything that needs to happen without me, right? Because I like to start the company and then just kind of move on to something else. Like, I like having the company and I like being the leader and I like talking to people, but I like developing the leaders of the company so they're really competent, really good at it, better than I ever could be at it. And then watching the company sort of grow and flourish without my active daily involvement. And that's one of my favorite things. I also like, you know, I like making connections, putting deals together, getting new contracts, new agreements. I like negotiating, and I like networking. So those are all things that I get to do, and I love it.
Man, we thank you for sharing that with us. One of the kids wanted to know, can you talk a little bit, and sorry about the rapid fire questions. I know we have some kids in Europe and it's a little later there, but so we're going to wrap it up in a little bit. But they want to know, can you talk about overcoming failures, the importance of persevering and overcoming failures when it comes to entrepreneurship?
Yeah, and you know, we often don't talk about it as much just because it's not as fun or it's not as impressive, right? Although the fact is that failure is a part of entrepreneurship. You know, I mean, you've probably read the statistics or you've read some anecdotes anyway. Walt Disney had several bankruptcies before he got into, you know, actually launched Disney World. I mean, the academic literature is just littered with examples of failure. The thing, so you asked about ADHD earlier. One of the really helpful things about having ADHD is that you have a kind of a short memory for failures. Like, you're able to get up, dust yourself off and move on and not stress about the failure you just had, but take what just happened and internalize it and learn and don't repeat it again and do something different. So if you're not failing, you're probably not trying hard enough or not taking enough risk, but every entrepreneur will tell you that they've had multiple failures. Sometimes even within the same company. I mean, Google started as a platform, they just wanted a way to be able to find a pizza shop and have pizza delivered online, right? So almost any company you can name has had internal failures and iterations. So it's normal. You've got to embrace it and you've got to have a really short memory. And the analogy to elite athletes is important too. So like, if you talk to professional athletes, elite athletes, they say that they have a short memory. And what that means is that they don't perseverate on the play that they just botched, right? So they make a bad play. They don't sit there and beat themselves up over it. They're not depressed about it. They don't say, oh, I'm terrible. They just forget it and move on to the next play and execute the way they've been trained and the way they know how to do it. So that's a really important aspect.
I mean, there's a whole lot of perseverance that you're talking about, even fight or flight. How do you go through it? Do you rise above or?
Yeah, I mean, so personally, and I know a lot of my peers very similar. I mean, we try to lead very active lifestyles, right? So we need that dopamine rush. We need to burn off energy. I mean, we need to stay very active. So movement, daily movement practice is super important. And also gratitude, daily mindfulness or gratitude practice is super important because, when you're in the thick of it, things can get very stressful. It could be really easy just to blow up and yell at people and blame people. But, you know, having a mindset of gratitude, thankfulness, mindfulness, really important. The other reason that's important is because people look to you for leadership. And as the entrepreneur, you're going to set the tone for everything that goes on in the business. So if you're just a wild, crazy person who yells and blows up, I mean, that's going to be the culture of your company, right? But if you're more deliberate and restrained and thoughtful, mindful, grateful, those are the things that are going to permeate throughout the organization.
Well, we're grateful for you taking the time to talk to us today. So you talk about Howard Schultz and you talk about, was it Larry Page over at Google? So all these different entrepreneurs, is there any one particular or couple particular entrepreneurs that you looked up to when you were first getting into the industry?
Not necessarily. I mean, you know, I had some friends who, you know, had interesting businesses. I always had this weird obsession with Ben Franklin as, like, you know, the original, you know, American entrepreneur, right, with all the things he was involved with, you know. But no, not necessarily. I just kind of, you know, I observe people who are doing interesting things. I always thought that was the pathway I wanted to choose for myself, was self-employment, like creating my own business, creating my own job, because I wanted to control my own destiny. So no one particular entrepreneur, just entrepreneurship in general is very attractive to me.
So it seems like it's just kind of a versatility where you're, because you also have a background in innovation. And I wanted to see if you could talk a little bit about that. I mean, you work with the telemedicine industry, which I'm not sure if that's big over there overseas, but it's getting huge out here on the West Coast of the United States, where when I get sick, I pull up telemedicine, I don't physically go in. And can you talk about how that was, did that accelerate quite a bit over COVID?
Yeah, so the company I invested in, and I was acting as the chief operating officer for a couple months while we hired for chief operating officer. But yeah, I think there was a 700-fold increase in telemedicine encounters at the beginning of COVID, right? Because people just weren't going to doctor's offices, you know? So yeah, absolutely. And more important than that, it's this whole idea of innovation in healthcare is really important, because right now, and you probably know too, we don't do healthcare, we do sick care, right? We wait until somebody's sick, we give them a pill, and we move on. But there's so much more to be gained if we can actually focus on real health, healthy behaviors, and that sort of thing. So the goal is not to ever get sick, right? Yeah.
Yeah, of course. And it sounds like, you know, you struck at the right time, you know, pre-COVID and all that. I'm sure that industry.
Yeah. No, so, you know, that was the good news, bad news, right? Like we were just getting ramped up and COVID happened and it like hit us in the face and we weren't quite ready. So it created a lot of stress in the organization, because now we had this amazing opportunity, but we weren't quite ready for it. So we lost a little bit of time. And as a matter of fact, our best markets are not even in the US. Our best markets are Italy, Bahrain, and Thailand, which, you know, that's where we have some active board members and investors. The US is a terrible market for us because there's very large existing players. So we're almost at the point where we're gonna just concede the US and just focus on overseas markets where we have traction.
That's genius. And, you know, I know Zoom was like that too. There are a few industries, yeah. I know telemedicine, where it's smaller, and then just mushrooms. So we have a question from Elena, and she's a final student question. She's in Italy. Elena, you should be able to unmute.
Yeah. So what's the worst part about your work?
So the worst part about it is that, like, everything starts and stops with me, right? So I'd say that the biggest source of frustration is cash flow, right? So in healthcare and education, it's very cash intensive. So we need a lot of operating capital. So we pay our employees 2 to 3 months before we actually get the money for the services they build for, right? So we'll have it's a physical therapist seeing patients. They see patients for the month of September. We've paid them for September, beginning of October, we send our bills out. Then maybe we get the money on those bills sometime in December. So there's 3 months, and our payroll is enormous. It's like $500,000 a month. So we require a lot of capital. So it's always stress over who owes me money, right? So I can pay my bills. That's the biggest source of stress.
That sounds super stressful. Yeah. So, before we let you go, because I know it's getting late for our European kids, is there any advice that you can impart on these kids as they go off into the world? You're very, very accomplished in your field. You know, it's clear you're successful both in and out of the classroom in this industry. What kind of advice would you give for these kids as they go off into the world and figure out what they want to do?
Yeah, you've probably heard it before, and it sounds maybe cliche, but definitely follow your passion, right? I mean, life is too short to do something that you don't like. And, if you can solve a problem for somebody in a way that's better than the next best alternatives, then you're going to be onto something, right? So keep that problem solving, opportunity recognition mentality, and always start with the problem, right? If you have a problem that you think needs to be solved, evaluate how it's currently being solved, and then think of a better way to do it. And that's where most innovations come from.
I love it. This is perfect. So we can't thank you enough for connecting with us today on this edutainment, on this virtual career day. Guys, definitely check out. We have a lot of awesome, great speakers at edutainmentlearning.com. And before I end the meeting for all, I'm going to ask everyone to unmute. And can we all say thank you to Dr. Torrence for taking a valuable day to talk to you guys today. Thank you so much, Dr. Torrence.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My pleasure.